Hello. Welcome back. Time show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks play action involves fetch. Actually, Lenny doesn't really play fetch, Dominique. Like, I'll throw a thing and he'll go and get it, but then the part where you bring it back just somehow doesn't register with him. So he'll go and get like a ball and then he'll just run around the house with it. And I'm like, I'm not going to chase you.
When I had a dog, he did the same thing. He didn't quite understand to bring it back. And B, am I at a point now where you don't even introduce me? You just say first name and everybody knows what's up.
Welcome back. How many, is this your third or fourth appearance?
It's my third appearance. I think it's the first one that is mired in a bit of disrespect, but that's all right. I'll take it. I'll take it how I can get them. I'm the top appearer, I believe.
So, the disrespect, Dominique, I'll just clear the air. Let people behind. Is it behind the kimono? You open the kimono, which is a really
you
disgusting
open the kimono,
phrase.
Yeah, you open the kimono really and you gross. Let people behind the curtain.
Especially like as an Asian woman, I object to open the kimono.
Yeah, your mention is going to be popping after this one.
All right. Well, I am opening the kimono of this podcast. So it is true. There was some disrespect. Dan Orlovsky was supposed to appear on the show. Shout out to Dan, but he was very popular and busy today. So my gracious friend and buddy, Dominique, agreed to pop by. We hung out a lot at the Super Bowl. You were in Atlanta for three or four days.
I didn't go to the Minneapolis one. The one in Houston, we were like joined at the hip, I felt like. I feel like this one, not so much. We had a little bit of hangout and we don't have any stories coming out of this Super Bowl like we had coming out of the Houston Super Bowl.
That's true. First couple of days, I think we hung out, but then you left before the game. So, yeah. I'm very curious about the experience of watching this game on television versus watching it in person. I tweeted this yesterday, Dominique, but I obviously watched it there in person and I was bored. Okay. It was not a good game. I'm just going to throw that there to watch live in person. I'm going to put that, but then I rewatched it and I still don't think it was a great game, but I found it interesting upon second viewing. I'm not trying to be a football hipster. I'm not saying it was actually a defensive coaching masterpiece, and if you didn't enjoy it, you're a plebeian. No, it wasn't fun. Like, scoring is fun, and anyone who says otherwise is full of crap. And also, even though there was great defense, you can have great defense and great offense at the same time. This was great defense and bad offense. So I want to ask you, at home, like, what was your experience of the game? Did you enjoy it at all?
I was trying to work up the gumption to say that I am enjoying this game, but I couldn't. And so I didn't not enjoy it. Like, I didn't think it was boring. I didn't want to turn it off because there were some really bad Super Bowls. Remember, there was a long stretch when we were young, like teenagers. I guess we aren't the same age. When I was a teenager and you were like a newborn, there was a long stretch of blowout Super Bowls. Like, those are boring. This one was bad, but not boring because I felt like it was a one score game almost throughout until the final moment. So there was suspense on every play. Just the problem was you would like that suspense to be like a big third down and it end in a deep pass or end in an interception. But often it was a deep third down or even a short third down that was like a Julian Edelman, like jerk route. That's exciting. Or it was like a sack or fumble or not a fumble, but like a sack and mismanaged opportunity by Jared Goff. Like, that's not exciting. So I liked the game. And I honestly think I might have enjoyed the game more if I were there, because then I would have had the better view. Like I the view where you can kind of try to pick out the things that are going on. I remember at the Houston Super Bowl, that game was fun. But it felt like a blowout for Atlanta. It was Atlanta versus the Patriots. Felt like a blowout for long stretches of the game because Atlanta was just running away with it. But you could see things. Like, I could see the defense, the way that the Patriots were trying to take away Julio. I just couldn't see that many adjustments from the TV copy. So that, to me, hurt it more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk shortly about all of the things the Patriots defense did, which it feels like the narrative, the primary story out of the game is the Patriots defense, that particular unit, right, and all of the crazy stuff they did. And yes, you saw a lot of those things live in person, you know, from where I was sitting pretty high up in the auxiliary press box. Many times I was intrigued and confused, but ultimately, actually, you know, you mentioned
auxiliary
it was close.
And press box.
Oh, dude, I always get oxed. I don't mind.
What?
I'm a woman of the people. I know. I like, the worst was being in the ox box. Well, not the worst, but the most dramatic experience I had was at that Houston Super Bowl in the ox box, because you're surrounded by fans. And so then you can really pick up on the emotions. And that game was extremely emotional for both fan bases. This game, right, not a lot of emotion, and certainly not a lot of Rams fans.
I don't know how I got in the regular box. I probably just walked in and act like I belonged there, because I can't imagine. Because I got in the regular box for the Houston Super Bowl. Anyway, yeah, you were saying important things about football, but my mind was blown that they put the great Mina Kimes in the ox box.
That's okay. I don't mind. I'm a communist. But I'm a commenter. But, you know, it is funny. You talk about how it was close. And by the way, blowouts. I saw some people pointing out that Super Bowl 48 not too long ago was a terrible game. Actually, it was probably the best Super Bowl in NFL history. Look it up. I mean, I thought it was excellent. But anyways, yeah, it was close. And really, honestly, like, both offenses kind of figured things out in the fourth quarter. We don't think the Rams did because of the outcome, but Jared Goff was in a position to win that game, you know, a couple times. So there definitely was a bit of unlocking that happened at the end, but ultimately it was mistakes by Goff and sort of the Rams offensive line that led to their undoing. But you know, all of that said, like I said, it wasn't fun, but when I rewatched it, it was kind of like part of the reason it wasn't fun at the time was because you were just praying for something to happen. When you know the outcome, I think sometimes you can actually just enjoy, it's like watching a movie where you know the ending and you notice like little Easter eggs and fun stuff.
Right.
So I'm not saying you should rewatch this game, necessarily, but it is interesting and it's frustrating.
I haven't rewatched it, but I'm tempted to rewatch it because you said that Jared Goff figured it out in the second half. I don't remember having that sense.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. Actually, let's start there. Let's talk about the Rams offense and the Patriots defense, because I found that to be a lot more interesting. Basically, the Rams defense versus the Patriots offense, it was funny. Like, the Rams defense was similarly quite good for three quarters, and then the Patriots offense kind of figured it out, and we'll talk about that. But I want to start with the Patriots defense and the Rams offense, and I want to start with, I guess, what a lot of people seem to think is the biggest question coming out of this game. I don't really think so, but I'm very curious about your thoughts, which is Todd Gurley. So it wasn't like the Saints game where they didn't use him at all. They kind of split snaps between him and Anderson, neither of whom were particularly effective. Now, Gurley says after the game, well, you know, he's like, I wasn't hurt. And I believe him. Like, I think if he was hurt, he'd want us to know. Right? And maybe we'll hear about Todd Gurley getting surgery or whatever. But to me, I actually, again, and I found this way after the Saints game, I think it was just a product of his own production and what the Patriots defense gave them. Do you disagree?
So he's hurt. Everybody who plays football is hurt to some degree by at this point of the season.
You never know what's going on, what happened to them that week, how they're feeling.
That is true.
Maybe they dunked, you know.
I know you're being sarcastic, but like all those things, they're people. They're not superhuman in a way that some people like to make them out to be. So all of those things can impact your level of preparation and the way you feel in the course of the game. But physically, is much easier to diagnose. So the point is, no one is 100% at that point. The question is, what on him is hurt, or what on him is hurting, and is it enough to hamper his performance? I'm with you in that. Really, at this point, there's no reason to say you're hurt, or no reason to continue to say that you're not hurt unless you are actually not hurt. But maybe it's also like there's no reason to say that he is hurt, because he doesn't need anybody. Like, he doesn't need that excuse. He doesn't need everybody all up in his off-season rehab
he already
process
got paid.
Or whatever. Yeah, so, I know he already got paid.
That contributes to you're right, because like right. There's no financial incentive for him to be like, oh, there's a reason I'm with him myself, you know?
Yeah. So I'm with you, but it doesn't make sense. Like, how often have we seen something like this happen? And if it was just one game, fine. If it was just two games, fine. But he missed a game, presumably because of injury, and then had a series of really not that impressive games that maybe you could chalk up to like they're saving him for the playoffs. So then when we get to the playoffs, why don't we use him? I heard Jim Mora. It snuck in there a little bit. Playoffs? I didn't even mean to, but it snuck in there. Playoffs?
It happens to us all. I guess, okay, so after the game, so the Patriots run defense, this is going to blow your mind. They allowed 122 yards in the playoffs, rushing yards. Mm-hmm. That's the second most in NFL history. The 86, that's more than the 85 Bears, or less than the 85 Bears, so better. The only teams that allowed fewer were the 86 Giants and the 2008 Steelers. And they were playing good running teams, right? So their performance was remarkable. And so after the game, Andrew Whitworth, the Rams left tackle, you know, talked about what they did. He said they played six on the line all day, which kind of limited the space to get the runs in there, which you saw them, right? They were putting all of those guys on the line of scrimmage. I think they had Chung cheating up and the other linebacker. And what that does, you know, when you've got them sort of a line wide like that, is it allows them to contain the outside zone, right? Which again is Gurley's bread and butter in some cases. So my question to you is, when a defense does that, what you'll do is you'll have six up, you'll have Hightower behind them, and then on those early downs, they were dropping the DBs into zones. And they were switching it up. We'll talk about that again. That was the other defensive storyline we've been hearing about all over the last few days. But when a defense gives you that to stop the run, what do you do as an offense to, you know, counter that, I suppose?
When they bring six up, I think it's inside. So if there's only one linebacker, then you go inside. I would say that you do trap plays because you just want to get to the second level. Yeah. And I don't know necessarily if you're trying to get wide, I don't necessarily think that's a bad strategy, but you need to bring someone down to crack on that defensive end or something in order to help you get the edge. Because if you have everyone up like that and you stretch them out, chances are someone's going to make a mistake. And if you have a good back, meaning someone's going to get out of their gap, and everyone has a lane responsibility. So you stretch them out and make them run. Someone's going to fall behind their lane or get too far in front of their lane. Gurley can set them up and then take that hole. That's one strategy. Or the other one is you use guards and even center to pull, and that changes the whole responsibility. So if you imagine in your mind, there's one guy, imagine you're the right guard. There's one guy inside of you between you and the center, a defender, and there's one guy outside of you between you and a tackle, and those guys are responsible for those gaps. If you pull and come out and go to the left, then you have both of them stuck in one gap, which means that there's another gap open somewhere that you need to find. And the person who is supposed to follow and fill that gap, follow any pulls, would be the linebacker. So I don't know if all this is tough to imagine, but I think those are the type of things that you will want to do, is counters and traps and whams, anything to get people out of their lanes.
It's not tough to imagine, because literally what you're describing, Dominique, is what happened on the 13-yard Gurley rush that got called back. You remember it was John Sullivan who got called on the kind of a dicey holding call. But if you go back and watch, Kyle Van Noy gets whammed, okay? Right. And it literally what you just described is what they did successfully on that play.
I didn't know that, but I'm going to pretend like that's what I was pulling it from.
No, you're a genius. And I'm befuddled that they didn't do it more often, and they didn't commit to it early on. The other thing that befuddles me, and this was something I was.
Hold on, can I take a timeout? 20-second timeout.
Okay, what?
For people who don't know what a wham is, so it's from when they allow a defender to penetrate the line without a lineman blocking them, and then they normally use a fullback or tight end to come outside in to kind of blindside them and kind of crack down on them. Proceed.
You're better at this.
No, I just assume that no one knows what the hell a wham is, and it's not just me and you having a phone chat.
You know, the Mina Kimes Show listeners are very sophisticated. But the other thing that befuddled me and drove me freaking crazy in this game while I was live, not just on the second viewing, is why wouldn't you pass it to Gurley or Anderson, right? Because we talk about, like, what is the Patriots defense giving you when they run that six-man front or whatever? They threw just one pass to Gurley on early downs the entire game, fourth quarter. They threw three to C.J. Anderson, but not until late in the third quarter. Where the heck were those passes? Where were the screens? Where were the little tosses to take pressure off Goff? I don't understand why they didn't do that.
I don't get it either. So I would like that the Patriots have linebackers who are pretty much all of the Patriots players are hybrids. Like they really have very few players that are just like one thing. And their linebackers are hybrids between D linemen and linebackers, frankly. Like their linebackers are best at rushing. Yeah. Hightower's a big guy. And Van Noy too. They are big guys. They are not hybrids between safeties and linebackers, which is, I guess, what Patrick Chung might be considered because he plays in that situation in the box quite a bit. But so that would suggest that the disadvantage for them would be to get them in coverage. And I think you and I might have talked about this in our text message, our text conversations, maybe not on any show, but that was a place where we thought that the advantage was a big advantage. So I did notice early, and again, I haven't rewatched the game, and because you texted me, 12 hours ago maybe, and said, hey, want to be on the show? I hadn't had a chance to rewatch it. But I do remember seeing while I was watching the game that a couple of times on the swing from Gurley, the defensive end peeled. So if they had defensive end peeling or like essentially spying Gurley, that makes it much more difficult to run screens. And it makes it difficult to get those just quick outlet passes. And if those aren't there, then I'm not sure. I think the problem is you get to the second step for Goff, and maybe step's the wrong noun. Maybe there's something else because you're smarter than me. But once that first option is taken away, Goff really seems to be in trouble, which is where it'd be nice if he could tuck and run or if he could just read the defenses better.
Yeah, and by the way, the other thing that you mentioned, the linebackers peeling off to contain screens, the other thing having them align widely like that does is it contains boots, which is another thing that Goff likes to do. They like to do fly sweep is another thing they like to do. But it's just a very smart strategy. After the game, Bill Belichick said, we felt like we had to put something together to neutralize the running game. Okay, we just explained how they do that. And their big play action passes on early downs. And that's the other thing. You know, I imagine you watching the game as a DB must have been, I mean, I don't want to say like it was shocking per se, because frankly, it's something we saw the Lions and the Bears do earlier in the season successfully, which was disguise some of their coverages. Obviously, they played a lot. You saw, I think, the Lions settled into quarters a lot, and the Bears played a lot of zone or, you know, what they call match coverage. And you saw the Pats, who primarily played man during the regular season, do that on early downs. We'll talk about what they did on later downs later when they were pressuring Goff and blitzing him. But on early downs, you saw them settling into these zones, taking away what the Rams like to do on play action, which is those posts and deep crossers. I guess, again, I'm going to go to you and say, like, what could the Rams have done given what the Pats were giving them in terms of the secondary?
So I think I understand how people, I don't know which player said it, but one of the players after the game said that the Rams run a lot of man beaters, so they played a lot of zone. Like, I think that is somewhat true, but not completely true, because the Rams plays, many of them, especially the boots and waggles on early downs, like, they are designed, in my estimation, they are designed to beat zone. The problem is they're also designed for the quarterback to get to the edge. So like those flood concepts, the whole point of a flood concept, like if it's man, you assume that, and a flood concept essentially is like along the sideline, you have three receivers at every level. Like, there's a guy in a flat, there's a guy intermediate, and there's a guy deep. So you are flooding that side of the field, and then there's often a late guy crossing. So if golf is booting that way, if it's man, the only hope is that your receivers can outrun their defenders to the sideline and get open. But in zone, like, you actually can't cover everybody. Someone will be open because normally there's a deep third player and then there's a flat player if it's a cover three. And if there's a cover four, there's a curl flat player and a quarters player. So you have three guys on two. So I don't agree that, and that's what they do on first down passes more than anything. I don't agree that is designed to beat man. The problem is they were also smart enough to have that six man line and pull up the edge. So if they're running a zone out, if they're running a zone and they don't let you actually get to the edge, you have to throw it from there. I do think that is advantageous to the defense because they're sitting there watching the quarterback and they can break on them. And the other thing that I would bring up that you brought up was the deep passes, the deep shots. And I think that's a really smart strategy because that's complimentary right there. It's like, all right, we're going to run from the Rams' perspective, we're going to run the ball really well. That theoretically is going to force people to bring more safeties and more defenders into the box, and then we make them pay over the top. So if you can take away the deep ones and take away the run and force Jared Goff to be precision passing guy in the intermediate range, then I think you're better off. How they took away the deep pass, it's hard for me to figure out, honestly, because unless they were playing areas, which I guess they're doing in zone, because the thing that the Rams did I watched all season was they wouldn't run that many plays. They would just get to them from different formations and use different players to get to them. So back to the flood concept. Yeah. There would always be someone in the flat, someone intermediate, and everyone was breaking out. Someone like running a deep out, someone running a flat, and someone running a go or a deep comeback or a deep post. But it was always someone different, and they would get to it in weird ways. So it's hard if you're out there and you're like, all right, Brandon Cooks is a deep guy. We're going to make sure he doesn't catch anything deep. It's hard if sometimes someone else is running that deep guy, which is why – and the deep passes are always kind of deep overs, deep posts, post corners, and I guess you just play those areas anticipating that someone's coming there and not necessarily knowing who.
Yeah, and I think – You talked about, okay, what are we giving Goff, right? Because I guess I hate this idea, like, oh, okay, all you had to do all season was play zone and put some, like, stupid. No, you give him stuff that everything you do in football, you take away certain things and you leave certain things vulnerable. And when I was rewatching it, what I noticed was they were giving him the outsides. They had McVay talked afterwards about buzzing. I can't remember what his exact language was, but what he was talking about was how they were using Chung primarily, and then later on Harmon when Chung went out to clog the middle of the field. Now, what he was doing on every play varied, and he was confusing in the middle, but primarily the Rams really feast on, again, those deep crossers and posts off of play action, and then open guys wide open in the middle of the field. The Patriots pretty much took that away. Now, there were, you know, Goff did have opportunities. There were guys open on the outsides, but that's not what he does primarily. The thing I think that's so important is not that they played zone Dominique, but that they confused him in doing so.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
I think you're right.
Yeah. Cause like Goff can beat zone. The Rams offense can beat zone. They did it, you know, frequently during the season. It's not like this is some, you know, catch all, but the problem was, you know, the Patriots were showing them so many different looks and then changing them after McVay clocked out on Goff that you could see him visibly struggling to read the entire field when they did that. And Warren Sharp posted these stats I thought were really interesting. On five plays that were on 18 plays that were snapped inside of 5 seconds on the play clock, the Rams averaged just 1.4 yards per play plus an interception. And then on the five plays snapped with 1 second left, which is, you know, right then, 0.2 yards per play. I don't know why, again, just talk about what they could have done. We talked about the passes and stuff. I don't know why they didn't play tempo more. to try to counter some of those, because the Patriots defense, like again, the Rams offense, they take their time. You know, Goff takes his time. Play action takes a long time. The Patriots defense was exploiting that. They were saying, all right, you're going to take your time. That's great. We're going to do a bunch of weird stuff. Like, change things up, which is very difficult. Now, if you go tempo, I think that neutralizes that a bit.
No, I absolutely think that neutralizes it. But I think that's where the Patriots are one of the best teams at having this kind of holistic, complementary game plan. They were wearing that Rams defense out. They were running the ball at them, and it felt like they were on the field all the time. That's the drawback of going tempo, is that if you don't get a first down, then you have been on the field for a total of 40 real seconds, and your defense is back out there, and that's tough. And I agree with you. I understand that maybe at some point they should have tried that. And I want to channel your preferred guest for today, because I heard him talking about this, Dan Orlovsky, about reading defenses. And it's something that only a quarterback would think to say, and I will now say it more often as if I thought of it. But the first time I'll give him credit is that turning your back to the defense in play action is killer against a smart defense. And that play action has all these benefits, but if you look at a coverage before the snap and you're like, all right, I know what the coverage is, you turn your back and then you turn around and people aren't where they're supposed to be. You cannot diagnose a coverage in the fractions of a second and then deliver an accurate pass. Like it seems incredibly impossible. I've never tried to do it, but if you imagine, like, all right, I got maybe a second to decide where to throw the ball and get rid of it after I turn my back around, like, that is just like shooting a blindfolded basketball shot.
So Orlovsky, it was making the point about the missed touchdown to Cooks, which in real time, when I saw Goff, you know, hesitate, I was like, what a dum-dum. And then I saw the video. And Orlovsky explains how, right, as you just said, you know, because of play action, because he had the back turn when they switched coverage and went from cover three to quarters, that's why he hesitated. Again, you know, that's a flaw. It's not like, you know, that's a mistake by him, but it definitely clarifies not only why he did hesitate, but the genius, again, of the Patriots defense. And my goodness, what a play by McCourty, by the way, closing in on that. Bad throw, though. Bad throw. All right. Well, Dominic, I don't know if you heard, but since you've been gone, I have acquired an advertiser. Did you know that? Yeah, big time, though.
Nice. Big money. Right, who is that?
So, fellas, today's February 6th, Wednesday, 8 days away from Valentine's. That's right. 6 plus 8 is 14, right? Yes. 8 days away from Valentine's Day. Now, I don't know what my husband is going to get me. I don't know what Dominique is going to get for his lovely wife. But if he's listening, and Dominique, I hope you are, you guys should consider getting some from Edible Arrangements. The freshest fruit married with the finest chocolate, artfully arranged to make a big impression. They have over 20 Valentine's Day gifts. I have looked at them all. I told you last week I thought the chocolate-covered strawberry bouquet was the best. That's what I would want, but, you know, to each their own. What do you think Ashley would want? Does she like chocolate-covered strawberries?
She likes fruit, but she doesn't like chocolate. So I've seen the edible arrangements that are just straight fruit. I would do that. She would get mad at me if I coated something in chocolate. Like, you don't know me?
That's
she only likes
she's
one chocolate thing,
healthy.
And that's your boy.
Oh, you should do this ad. Wow. All right. So, look, it doesn't make a difference if it's for your special someone, for all your special someones, for your pups. When you feel love, share it with Edible Arrangements. And by the way, so it's February 6th now. If you order by February 10th, you get 20% off all pickup orders over $50. Stop by your local Edible Arrangements and experience love at first bite, or do what I would do, probably, because I'm lazy and I barely drive, and order online, have it delivered at edible.com. And now, as always, going to take some questions.
Question.
Hold on. Time out.
You were just taking over the show.
Yeah.
Well, okay,
because,
time out. Let's.
Because I don't need to be here, and you forced me, so I'm being mean in return. Edible Arrangement would be a nice thing to send to someone who you called 4 hours before a podcast and say, hey, come on, be on. Anyway.
Do you like chocolate-covered strawberries, Dominic?
No, I'm just joking with you. I don't like chocolate either.
Wow. You like fruit, though. You're a fruit guy.
Love it.
Okay. So I will consider sending you that. Thank you for filling in. Orlowski gets chocolate-covered strawberries. Mailbag!
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
So we're back on track. I took a few Super Bowl questions, but I'm back on track with the, you know, regular questions. Like always, if you leave a question in my iTunes reviews with a nice 5-star review, please remember my mom reads them. I will answer them. And we're getting closer and closer to the present tense. So we're in, I believe, January now. Kyle Kelly Sr. asks, what did the Dolphins have to do to make the playoffs? I'm going to, you know, these questions are pretty short, so I'm going to make this one shorter and ask you, Dominique, what do you think they should do about the Tannehill situation?
Yeah, I think you move on from Tannehill at this point, not because I think he's bad or can't be successful. He'll probably go somewhere else and play well. Is I do think that the money that you have to pay for him, he's essentially unproven at this point, is a bit too much. Like, you're bringing in a new coach. I think they are clearly signaling to the world that they're in rebuild mode, and Tannehill's not the rebuild quarterback.
Quote from the new coach, Brian Flores, who just called a hell of a game, talked about how he, and I freaking love this, he said, look, we're going to treat every game like a different game, which is what New England did and why they won the freaking Super Bowl. And I love that. I have my doubts as to whether the Dolphins defense can execute that right away, but I think it's great. And gosh, Dolphins fans got to be feeling good coming after that, off of that Super Bowl, right? Charles Nick from Dallas asks, you know, given what we've seen around the league in running backs and overpaid running backs, should the Cowboys invest in Zeke? I got to say yes. And again, we saw what Gurley, you know, what happened there. But I personally think Ezekiel Elliott is one of the two best running backs in the NFL. I think he's phenomenal. So I do think, obviously, there's a limit on that. But I think he's just so good, Dominique.
Yeah, I agree. Is it possible that he is being underutilized? He gets the ball like 100 times a game, but I think he is underutilized in the passing game. Like, I would like to see, I'd like to see Le'Veon Bell style usage where he is lined up, which they do put him in the slot occasionally, but I think that would make life a whole bunch easier for everyone, except for him, but they would win more.
He's a great pass catcher. He's so great. You know, changing the guard there in Dallas, so we'll see. After a strategic change, Disnegu here, I hope I didn't, it's N-E-G-U, asks, what's the best thing you've watched on Netflix? Well, I just watched Roma, which was very good, but I'm a big Terrace House fan, which is a Japanese reality show it's a very slow-moving Japanese reality show about a bunch of strangers living in a house, kind of like Japanese Real World. Big Stranger Things fan as well. Pablo Torre Stan, don't like that, asks, what's your favorite grocery aisle and why? I'm going to go with cereal.
Cereal has to be up there, right? Yeah,
jinx. Also, this is so me and so embarrassing, but I'm always cold in the cold parts of the grocery store, so I move very quickly through them because I'm always cold, like in the freezer, and even the produce is too cold for me. Carson Diddy asks, and this is the last question, Josh Rosen or Josh Allen? Ooh. What do you think? It's so hard to evaluate either of these guys at this point. Who the heck knows? Honestly, especially Josh Rosen.
Yeah, Josh Rosen is hard to evaluate. I was big on Josh Rosen before the draft, so that makes me want to stick with him. But my man Josh Allen can tote that pill, and I appreciate that about him. I like Jaheim Allen, so I'm going to go.
Yeah, he's got the scoots.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the scoots for now because Rosen hasn't done much in the league.
Me too. I mean, okay. I just, you know, just Josh Rosen hasn't showed us much. I actually picked him as my player most likely to take a leap forward because literally he can't be worse. like a Jared Goff style jump. I mean, just, but again, like that offense around was so bad that I just, I don't think it's fair to judge him, but I also don't think it's fair to, you know, not give Allen credit for, I think, playing better than expected. I'm still not super high on him, as listeners to this pod know. But I think both guys, you know, really have a shot to show us something different. All right. So back to the game. So we spent a lot of time talking about the Patriots defense. And I think, like I said, that's been kind of the big story. But the Rams defense played really well. And that's what's so terrible about this. I mean, that's why Goff himself said he felt terrible in particular because the Rams defense played so well. So I want to ask you first, I guess, about that Rams pass rush and that Rams defensive line, like, do you think they were good in this game? I'm just going to start, you know, very simply. Aaron Donald, right. Sue, Fowler, like, what do you think of them?
Yes, I think so. I mean, they sacked Tom Brady, which was something that no one else was able to do through the course of the playoffs. True. And they got pressure at times. The problem is it often also feels like the Patriots aren't trying, which I know is foolish, but it seemed like when they needed to move the ball, they were able to move the ball. You know, like at those important moments, they were able to do things, and I can't blame that on the Rams defense. It's hard. You hold someone to 13 points in the Super Bowl. Presumably that's a good team, a team that scored like a million points against the Chargers and scored, well, there's no credit for scoring, I guess, a lot of points against the Chiefs. But hold in with 13 points, you have to say that the defense graded out pretty well. Not just the defensive line, the entire defense.
Yeah, well, they held together until the end there. I mean, like, if you look at Sony Michel's yardage, it's almost all, like, at the end, pretty much. And Sue, again, like, Donald and Sue didn't really hit, you know, make a statistical impact, but he was very good in the game. I mean, really tremendous stopping the run as he's been throughout the postseason, and you saw him getting a fair amount of pressure on Brady. Now, I say fair amount because I read somewhere that all three postseason teams, including the Rams, posted their lowest pressure percentage of the season versus New England, which is a testament to that, not only the Patriots' game plan, but their offensive line, which was probably the best unit of any unit in the playoffs, right? You know, and the way they handled Donald was something I, you know, during the game, you didn't really notice because I was kind of watching Fowler or what you're trying to see what the Pats were doing, but he was either double teamed or they ran away from him or played away from him on just about every play. So, which again, I think the Rams did a good job of capitalizing on that. You know, like I said, you said it yourself, 13 points. Like, what are you gonna say about that? The only thing they were able to do in the first half was throw it to Julian Edelman.
Right.
So that's, I guess, something I thought would be an issue going into this game, and I wasn't sure how the Rams would handle Edelman, right? Even though they've actually been pretty good statistically at stopping slot receivers throughout the regular season.
Well, how do you know, though?
Edelman is such a...
Yeah, because you were saying on Levitard's show before the game that Edelman was a key, and I was not concerned, and I don't think very many people were concerned about Edelman because that is one thing that the Rams have is... They have some good corners and statistically have been good against the slot. What made you concerned about Edelman going in?
In the playoffs, I had seen them, you know, stacking the box to stop the run. And they were vulnerable to slot receivers. Now, the teams that they played weren't able to capitalize on that per se. And that's probably because that's just not what the Chiefs do. That's not what the Chargers really do. Right. So my thinking was, like if they do this again in the Super Bowl, Edelman's going to be open. And the thing about Edelman and the reason he's like a human third down, as Mike Gold Jr. calls him, is he can get open against man or zone. You know, the Patriots obviously, you know, they play their games at the line to bring guys open versus man with picks and rubs and such. And he's just, I mean, he was, Brady was bad. Let's talk about that. Brady stunk in the first half. Edelman was just wide freaking open all game.
Yeah, he was. So that was making me uncomfortable. Because that, as a professional, that is the thing I hated most. Whenever anyone would ask me the question, like, who do you have the hardest time guarding? And, like, I played against some of the best receivers of all time, and I'd never really had trouble with the big guys. Like, I'm fine with big people. I'm fine with fast people. What I hated was shifty, quick, change direction players, especially when they are paired with a accurate quarterback. I hated going up against Deion Branch. And like we would play Randy Moss the week prior, and like I wasn't excited to play against Randy Moss. Like I was like, oh, I'm gonna shut him down. But I felt more comfortable on the field guarding him than. And part of that was because he was in Oakland at the time. But even when he was in, in New England guarding Randy Moss, like I felt more comfortable than when I'm in the slot against Deion Branch, and he's moving all around and shifting and shaking, and Tom Brady can put it exactly where he wants. So I hated that. And no matter how good your corners are, the quarterback's accurate. There's nothing you can do in man coverage against someone who can change directions that quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, and it would speaking of the change direction, so we'll talk about the final drive in a second because they had him on option routes pretty much over and over and over. But
don't say option routes. Oh, gosh. Because that's not fair. They have, like, how do you cover someone who doesn't have a route? Like, those jerk routes
like
and those
ghost
options, it's like, we're going to clear out. We're going to take everyone deep, and then we are going to put you in the middle of the field with 52, how wide is the field? 53, 52 yards wide, and the route that he has to run is whatever you want. Just get enough room, and then put your hands up.
Here's how you don't cover him. With Aqib Talib. Good God. That first quarter, Barnwell and I were DMing each other, and I was like, oh man, like, whatever they're doing is not working because Aqib Talib who's a very good cornerback and played well the entire rest of the game, is getting juked out of his pants. And at some point they tried a few different things. At some point they switched to Marcus Peters, who actually did a much better job, which is partially why, you saw a little bit less Edelman action down the stretch until they started getting him matched up on linebackers. Peters, by the way, was pretty good the entire game. But so the first half, it's all Edelman and basically nothing else. By the way, in the entire game, they went 3-for-12 on third downs, which is crazy. And 13, points, lowest points in a Super Bowl winning team in NFL history. But so the first half, it's like trash. Both quarterbacks, trash. Both offenses, trash. And yeah, they made some adjustments, and really, the Patriots wanted on a single drive, right? Which was the touchdown drive when Brady throws his best pass of the entire game, maybe his best pass of the postseason.
Gronk one.
That was nice.
Phenomenal and Gronk catch. Oh gosh, it was beautiful.
Oh. And that's the thing about Brady, right? Like, he can be pretty bad an entire game, but and Jared Goff had a few nice passes difference, but the difference in this game was Brady made that 29-yard pass to Gronk, and Goff screwed up when he got cooked. No, I'm serious. Interception to Edelman, Gilmore, that was a terrible underthrown pass. Those two passes, you could argue, were the difference in this game. So tell me about that drive.
The degree of difficulty
was
harder for Goff, though. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ooh, I don't know, man. Gronk was triple cover.
I guess the degree of difficulty for throwing that pass was very high. But, I mean, if you ask either of them which option would they rather have, I think Jared Goff would rather be five wide with his eyes on the defense, spread them all the way out so you can see the coverage. They can't hide it.
Yeah.
And all I have to do is probably a bit of a misnomer, but the challenge is to throw an exceedingly accurate pass. For Goff, the challenge was to turn around, read the coverage in a split second, and then throw an accurate pass. But anyway, sorry.
And I'm being unfair because you remind me of something, which is like Brady had a pretty freaking clean pocket on that last drive versus Goff, who had a dude in, I can't remember who it was, but somebody was in his face on that last throw, which is why when Goff has a guy in his face, he throws it up. So just that last drive, like, what did you see from the Patriots? Like, why do you think they were so successful versus, the rest of the game?
Yeah, it feels like, again, it goes back to a point that I made earlier, that they only did what they needed to do when they needed it. So they could have done this all game. And I know that McDaniels has said that this play that they ran with that personnel was something that they had never run before. But it was a very simple play that has been a part of their offense as far back as when I played against them. So it's not an unfamiliar play. And I think that they knew that I'm talking about the play that they kept hitting Edelman on, which was the same play that they threw
over and over on that drive.
Yep. The same play that they threw to Gronk. But that's what I'm saying. It's not a new play. It's not a complicated play. It's not a novel play. They ran it decades ago, and many teams run it. And I imagine that in their minds, they were like, all right, we have this. We will go to this when we need it. And they needed it, and they went to it over and over again. I feel like they could have done that earlier, but it didn't feel like they – I don't think that it was something that they just thought of at that moment. That's all. Like, I feel like before they went into the game, they were like, all right, if they're going to leave Edelman like this, we're going to clear it out and make and let Edelman work and then make them adjust to that and hit people off of that.
So what Fox is talking about is on that final drive, they went into 22, which means, you know, two running backs, two tight ends. Okay. And then they split the backs out wide. So they were using them as receivers and they were coming out of empty end. What they wanted to do is they wanted to force the Rams defense into base to get the matchups they wanted, which is why you end up seeing a linebacker on Gronk or a linebacker on Edelman. And, you know, that's what happened. The thing is, it's like, again, people always say, well, why don't you just do that? Every team should do that. You know, they have guys with unusual skill sets. They have backs in Burkhead and Michelle who can catch passes and run routes and are threats to do that. And they've got a tight end in Gronk who can, you know, get vertical up the seam. And then they've got that shifty little wide receiver in Edelman who can do all the stuff that Dominique was complaining about earlier. Like, that's the reason they can do that. Right. And that's the reason it was so effective on this drive. It's interesting, Dominique, that they didn't do that until the end of the game, I guess, because obviously it was extremely potent and extremely successful. I mean, I guess some of it has to do with the Rams defense. They were obviously tired too, at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only way the fatigue played into that drive in my mind was maybe pass rush or pressure. Like, I don't think that fatigue impacted like the coverage. The Patriots and they optimize for adaptability of their players. Like we talked about, their linebackers are hybrids. Their D linemen, in many cases, are hybrids. Their secondary are all have experienced, I think just about all four of their starting secondary guys have played corner at some time or another, so they can play corner and safety. Like that is what allows them to be great on offense and defense. And Gronk's the best ever at run blocking and being a pass catcher. So like that's what they do, is they just get a bunch of guys who, with exception of Gronk, but a bunch of guys who are not great but are good at a lot of stuff, and it allows them to be flexible in the course of the game, and smart guys.
Did you think Edelman deserved an MVP?
I didn't, but I mean, it's fine.
Gilmore?
I mean, I guess the question isn't, I can't say I don't think that he didn't deserve it. He deserved it. I think other people deserved it more, but that's, I found it hard immediately after the game to give it to an offensive player. I know he was the only offensive player that was worth anything, including Tom Brady, for large stretches of that game. But he didn't even have like a signature play, and he didn't, and they were bad on offense. It's hard to give it to, you got 13 points and we give it to a guy, and it wasn't even like he made, I understand you give it to him if he makes the David Tyree catch or he makes some incredible signature play. Like, no, he did like some some good stuff, but it wasn't amazing. And the biggest play of the game you just mentioned wasn't even involved.
And, the thing is, Gilmore had the impact play, and in the past, it's gone to, like, you remember Malcolm Smith and the aforementioned delightful Super Bowl 48. They'll give it to a defensive guy who gets those big plays. I actually thought Hightower was more impactful than Gilmore, though, in this game.
Yep.
Patriots don't win this game without Dante Hightower. He was unbelievable.
I agree with
for
you.
All the reasons we discussed. So I actually think he was probably the, if you're really going to give it to the most valuable player, that's Dante Hightower for me.
Yeah. I agree with you. But I guess what's the hierarchy? It's like, all right, give it to quarterbacks. When we can't give it to quarterbacks, it's like give it to best offensive player or best statistical offensive player. Like you have to go through a few lines before you get to give it to defensive player. Yeah. Unless it's like the Ravens, where like the story going into, and we are human, so we're impacted. No one is able to watch a game in isolation without all the history that comes with it and all the other context. Right. So like that Ravens Super Bowl, like the story is the defense the whole time. So you want to give it to a defender. You want to give it to Ray Lewis, who ended up winning it that year, I believe. And the same is probably true for the Seahawks, where it's like the story is the defense and a defensive player balled out. So you got to give it to a defender. Like
it's really hard to get through. Literally no one remembers. You got to go pretty far down the line. Well, speaking of those quarterbacks, and let's wrap this up, you know, talking about them, who both struggled in this game, I think, although, you know, like I said, I think it really came down to two throws. Both teams have some potential decisions to make with them. Brady's got one more year on his contract. Cap hits $27 million, so the Pats could extend him. And then Goff, you know, we're getting to that time where the Rams are going to have to start thinking about an extension for them. So what do you think, like, if you're – let's start with the Pats. If you're the Pats,
no,
do you extend
there.
Brady?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if Brady wants an extension, you extend Brady. Like, I don't think there's much of a decision there. Like, Brady has been taking pay cuts for his entire career. So and he probably will continue to do so. So I think you pay him – because of that, you pay him because he, while he was not great this year, he is great there. And then what is the option? Has anyone been making an argument that maybe they should move on from Brady? Oh, okay.
I think it's just a question of how much. And well, actually, I think the real debate is should the Pats draft a quarterback high up? I just suggested Kyler Murray. I don't know if he'll, because of the way freaking drafts go, I don't know if he'll even fall that far, but you know, they might trade up. Like, what do you think they should do beyond Brady?
Yeah,
I guess it depends on the extension too.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think you give him the extension at whatever number he wants, and I assume that he's going to work with you. I'm at the point now where, and it seems Robert Kraft is at that point too, where Brady has done so much that you do what Brady wants. Robert Kraft doesn't make those personnel decisions, but I think I would love to bring another quarterback in, but if it's going to upset Brady, I wouldn't do it. The man's won you 6 Super Bowls, got you to 9. Like, he can take snaps until he decides he doesn't want to play anymore. Like, I feel like that's, you've already won more than your fair share of Super Bowls. If Tom Brady takes your organization for the next decade because he wants to hang on too long, then so damn be it.
Well, so more complicated, I think, is the Goff one, right? Because he was bad. He was he was like a C-minus, D-plus in this game, and if he was a C-plus, B-minus, they probably would have won, right? So I think that was the difference. But, you know, it's fair to say, well, look, it's one game, the Patriots are brilliant. But he kind of struggled the whole second half of the season. Now, again, in the Saints game, he came back and played amazingly at the very end, but he struggled before then. Like, what do you do with this guy? Like, I think they're going to pay him a lot because I think that's just what you do. But, like, do you feel good about that?
I think you pay him and you feel good about it, honestly. Like, I have never been a big Jared Goff supporter. I remember after the Vikings game, I probably had a little bit of crow.
Incredible.
I had
that was
a
the best quarterback performance of the season, by the way.
Yeah, I had like one crow wing, but I wasn't fully ready to eat an entire crow. I think that he is good. He is good there, and he is capable of throwing the ball extremely accurately.
Yes.
When the picture is clear in his mind, I think that you have a coach who can make the picture clear, like the. You need Goff to improve, but you need McVay to improve in those big spots. And I think I think Jared Goff is worthy of a big time franchise quarterback extension. And what's he? He's only in his third year right now.
Yes.
I guess it's hard to argue that he will get better, but he can still get better. And I think that, I don't think you have much. If you can pay him less than what the top quarterback gets, like I think if you can argue it down to somewhere in the top 5, that would be great. But if you have to pay him, you have to make him the highest paid quarterback, then I feel like you got to do it.
He's accurate. And you and I always talk about how he has the capacity to be an extremely accurate passer. You hear about quarterbacks. Matt Ryan comes to mind, who have said that they've gotten better at the mental processing part of it, right? So I don't think it's beyond the pale that like that will change for him, that he's going to get better at reading defenses and making those adjustments. But, you know, ultimately, the story of the Super Bowl for me was Sean McVay wasn't honest with himself about Jared Goff's capabilities and limitations, maybe, or didn't make the necessary adjustments.
Right.
To deal with that. So I guess I'm inclined to agree. I don't think it's the worst thing at all. Obviously, it makes their lives a little bit harder, and they're going to have to say goodbye to some guys. Sue, Fowler, you know, are probably gone next year.
Right.
And the Gurley thing, I didn't think that was the right contract anyways at the time. But they're probably going to do it. So, you know what? So I got another quarterback question, and as always, we end with our final segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Question number one. Where's Nick Foles next year? You saw the latest. He just he bought himself out. They could still tag him, though.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, there's rumors that they are going to tag him, right? That's
so if they do, then they've got to have a trade lined up already.
Right. Well, okay. So, yeah. I don't know. What do you think? So I think they're obvious teams like Jacksonville is the most obvious team that's been in desperate need of a quarterback for quite some time. I think that whoever gets Nick Foles is going to be disappointed. But I think that Nick Foles is going to be a very highly coveted free agent or trade opportunity. So he'll have his choice of all the teams, right? And he's the number one guy. Yeah. Like if a team's not drafting a quarterback, I guess it's just about teams who are in rebuild mode and teams who think they are a quarterback away. All the teams that think they're a quarterback away, Nick Foles is number one choice, right?
And that would be Jacksonville. Yeah, because like you look at the guys that need quarterbacks. Giants, I think they're going to draft. They're pretty much the highest. They've got the highest draft pick of any team that really needs a quarterback, so they're kind of in pole position. Washington doesn't have the money. I think Bridgewater to Washington makes sense to me. Miami might move on. We talked about Tannehill. I could see that being a possibility, but Jacksonville just seems like the most likely outcome.
Yeah.
All right. Question number two.
Sorry. Moving on.
Okay. So what was your favorite thing about Atlanta?
My favorite thing about Atlanta was that it was the highest concentration of Dominique Foxworth fans that I've ever had in my life. So my demographic, and I think it's from going on shows like First Take, that I think First Take might have the highest percentage of like black viewership of any TV show. It's like almost 50% when the population in the country is only like 11. But like I've always laughed for the last like 2 years. I've laughed with my wife that everywhere I go, the only time I get noticed is like 45 to 50 year old black men who point at me and say, ESPN, ESPN, hey, young blood, you ESPN, right? And like one out of three of them like know my name, will call me Dominique, but most of them just call me ESPN. So it was incredibly fun in Atlanta every four steps. I think it was, I averaged like five times a day, which is a lot for me, where somebody, some old black man was like, yo, ESPN, young blood. And it became a running joke, and it was very happy. And I was very happy. And they all had good things to say and said I was making them proud. So that was my favorite part.
Dominique and I were walking into the media center, and Dominique didn't hear this, but I heard someone scream, hey, is that Dominique Duckworth? I wanted to turn around and say, yeah, you should go say hi to him. By the way, my interactions with fans are very different from yours.
Sorry.
That's okay. So I just saw, by the way, question three, our friend of the show, Andrew Hawkins, I just saw it's reported they're making a movie about his life. So my question for you is, who would play you in the movie about your life?
In the movie about my life? Hold on, I don't know that much about Andrew Hawkins. I need to read up on the Andrew Hawkins story.
Yeah, you got to read up on it.
He deserves a movie.
It's pretty inspiring, yeah.
Okay, I'll read about it. I certainly will. I'll play me in the movie. My acting skills are superb. And you can't find anyone who can capture my good looks. Like, there isn't an actor out there. It would be weird if you had to, like, try to make someone look as handsome as me.
I'll go Jamie Foxx. What team that, since you want to answer the question, what team that didn't make the playoffs gets in next year?
All right, let's see. Who didn't make the playoffs? So I guess the Eagles could get in. The Jags are a good team. Who else? The Chargers did get in.
Niners,
yes.
With they get Garoppolo bags. Steelers.
Yeah, and
although
Steelers, yeah. No, I like the Niners. I'm going to go Niners.
Really?
I ran into my man John Lynch down there. He's didn't get in the Hall of Fame, but he's excited about next season. And I think that division, I think the Rams are going to take a step back. I guess the Seahawks are pretty good. They're going to get better because this was supposed to be a down year for them. So that division could be tough. But, I mean, I don't believe in the Steelers.
Vikings, another team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Vikings. I like the Vikings, but you have a healthy Aaron Rodgers and a tough Chicago team. I feel like the 49ers is the out on the limb pick, so I'm going to go with that one. The other ones, what about you? Who do you pick?
I'll go with the Packers. I think they're going to be rejuvenated.
That's lazy.
New coach and stuff. Yeah, well,
Aaron
Rodgers, it's my podcast.
Cheating.
Do what I want. I do what I want. All right, final question, as always, from Lenny. Dominique! I heard that during the Super Bowl, you went to bed every night before 11. My question is, why are you so lame?
So,
it's a question.
You heard. It's a great question. I am not lame. I have just I have just circled lame so long ago that I passed lame. I got the cool, and I'm so cool that I came back to lame. How does that sound? But I didn't go to bed that early every night. That was just a couple nights. My wife came in town for like Friday and Saturday night, and she is not lame. So I had to like scramble to get to some party. So actually,
how late did
nights,
you guys stay out?
Yeah. I think the Saturday night we went to two different parties and ended up getting back at like 3. I think Friday night we went home at like midnight. So that was aggressive for me. But yeah, so. I mean, you act like it's funny because you like to juxtapose your coolness with
mine. My podcast's over. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciated it. Hope you get your wife an edible arrangement for Valentine's Day. Send in a picture. Dominique, thank you for coming on. You were second choice today, but you emerged as the best guest. Because
at least you know when I say anytime, I actually do mean it. So I will be awaiting my next 3-hour heads-up call.
All right, bud. We're back next week. Thanks, guys.